and welcome to the Trash Tapes Podcast as part of the Enigmatic Productions Network. If you love bad cinema and incredible deep dives into cult film, then you have come to the right place. So if you like what you hear and want to support us, you can do so by donating some funds to our Buy Me a Coffee website, along with the Acast supporter feature. All of these can be found in the description below. And now, on with the show.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Okay, so let me just get into the zone and get ready for things because, this is so much to talk about. There's so much to talk about with this bull. All right, okay, so now my other bit of energy drink. I'm going to be so bitchy today. I'm sorry.
Fucking hell, you got a big shot of director's bitter there or something.
It's fucking huge, mate. This
is a nice thick slice of director's bitter.
Nothing quite like that. In this case, he'll give me so much energy by the end of it, I might be bouncing off the walls. But to be frank, this movie was just bouncing off the walls, so we're fine. So. Yeah.
You are about to experience trash cinema. Oh my God!
And welcome to another episode of The Trash Tapes. One man's trash is another man's treasure. I'm your host, Johan Chapul, and the inflictor of pain, and I'm here usually with my victim, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm really excited about this collaboration.
Oh, you've ruined it, but good. So, we're not joined by just you and me. Because we're all in our isolation stations, we're actually able to grab a few other victims to watch this piece of garbage with us. And that is basically Ben Arrington and Luke Condor of the Horror Hangout. So, say hi, hey. Everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
It's interesting that you called us a victim, because when I was watching this, I felt victimized. In many ways.
this is why I'm nicknamed the Inflictor of Pain, because usually I just give crap to people and say, can you survive the next half, 90 minutes of whatever the fuck this is? So I'm glad you're able to survive us.
I have flipped it around one time, though. I told Johan to watch like a really bad ninja movie, and he watched it, and I didn't watch it. So I got him to watch it, and it was absolutely appalling, and we never actually covered it on the podcast. What was it called again, Johan?
I think it was literally like Ninja versus Cobra.
Cobra against Ninja. That was it.
That was a piece of trash.
Cobra against Ninja. Cobra versus.
They couldn't be bothered to use versus. They were just like, well, what happens when two people go up against each other? Against each other, yeah.
And you didn't even watch it, Ed. Is that right? You didn't even bother.
No, he recommended it to me and said, oh, this is going to be great. And I watched it thinking he was going to watch it. When I found out he didn't watch it, I got pissed.
It's because I watched a clip from it on YouTube that looked amazing. Apparently that clip is the only decent thing about it.
Oh, tell me about it. Yeah. So there's going to be a video on that eventually, isn't there, Ed? Of just me just shouting, these are only the best 15 minutes of this entire movie.
Yeah.
But yes, enough of that then, basically. Just because we got our guests here, I think it's best if you guys properly introduce yourselves and talk about your podcast, The Horror Hangout, in a little bit more detail. So for our listeners can tune in and stuff like that. So tell us about yourselves.
Sure. Well, so this is Luke speaking. Me and Ben, we do a podcast called The Horror Hangout. We started out by watching the best 50 horror movies as per Empire Magazine's ratings, and we sort of rated and reviewed them as we went on. But we finished that, and now we're just sort of winging it every week, watching new and old, good and terrible horror movies.
We did sort of have a bit of a plan in place, and now we kind of just week by week kind of pick a horror movie, watch it. It doesn't have to be good, doesn't have to be bad. But yeah, we're kind of working our way through quite a lot of them at the moment.
Yeah, how many episodes have we done now? 140.
Yeah, so I think we're on about 100, we're approaching 140. So yeah, it's good. It's just the two of us, but we get like other guys in. Johan, obviously you've been on the show before. We discuss various films as well. Andy Conduit Turner joins us regularly as well. So
Oh, he's the quiz master, isn't he?
We have the horror movie quiz as well. Yeah, it's quite good.
So just to sort of clarify them, basically, it's because you have done so many episodes. Does this make you technically horror experts?
No.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But I
referring
do know,
back to those quiz episodes as well, like those quiz episodes, we've done like terribly in some rounds where you're like, I'm pretty sure I know a lot about horror movies. And then the questions are put to you and you go, I know nothing about horror movies. So it's one of those things.
I know more than we did when we started. I feel like I went into the podcast as like a horror fan, but now I am a horror enthusiast. Horror movie enthusiast or something along those lines.
Well, that's a bit like me with the trash tapes, because Johan was like an expert on trash, I think, but when we started, and I was just kind of this victim that he brought along. And now I know almost as much about bad movies as him, like kind of. I'm recommending a lot of trash to him and getting him to watch bad ninja movies.
What's the trashiest movie you've had on so far?
Oh, are we talking about good or bad? Because
good trash, like a good cult movie or something.
Oh, we've done things like Samurai Cop, Troll 2, we've done The Room, we've done Miami Connection, we've done all these great ones already, and we're going to have more coming along the pipeline, so that's going to be quite fun. But we're now going to talk about the next bit. So since you guys are horror, and I said, okay, we'll find you a horror. I said, okay, we need to find something they've never seen before. Clearly, you have not seen this one before, because we're about to review Spookies. Way.
What's this supposed to be?
Looks sort of like a Parcheesi game or something.
I know what this is. I mean, I've never seen one like this before. It's a Ouija board.
Well, how do you play? Don't you need dice or something?
You don't play. The Ouija board is a tool for communication.
Communication with who?
The dead.
Happy birthday, Billy.
Come on, Megan, it's spooky as hell inside.
Right, okay, right. Spookies. So, right. So just before we go into anything, let's go in a couple of words or sentences. Describe your feeling as you were watching Spookies.
I felt like I was being attacked by boglins.
Boglins. Boglins. I should have wrote that down because I fought boglins at least five times. I fought boglins.
I always wanted a boglin, but they were expensive, weren't they?
Yeah. They had like the same teeth. Like the way the things in the mouths were, they were boglins. There was no way to put it.
I feel like this film almost became 4D for me. Like, I feel like I could smell like the latex and all of the monster effects.
Definitely.
I was like, I could smell that latex. It's so rubbery. I could smell it right now.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Brilliant. I'm glad that this movie's giving you some kind of bizarre out of body experience, because it has for me. How about you, Ed?
I was finding it like a slog, like a real slog. And then when the sort of the crazy effects started kicking in, I was like, oh, okay, this has got something redeeming. I loved the generic Halloween costume type. Like enemies. I'm saying enemies like it's a game. But it was a bit like, it felt like I played a game of some kind. Yeah. Like a really bad Resident Evil.
No, I was thinking more, this reminds me of, in terms of how the layout is and all the monsters, it finds a little bit like, it's like playing a game of Slaughterhouse without the killer fucking guy with the machete to do all the slaughtering.
Oh, Splatterhouse.
Splatterhouse. You've got like monster here, monster there, monster here, monster there, monster there, monster there. It's a... It's kind of overwhelming. Right, I'm going to give you a bit of a breakdown, because usually on the trash tapes, we usually go through context, because I kind of feel like sometimes in most trashy movies, the backstory for these are far more interesting than the actual movie itself. And so we're going to go for a little bit here. So Spookies is a 1986 American independent horror film directed by Brandon Faulkner and Thomas Doran, which was lit with additional footage directed by Eugene Joseph. Now, there's going to be a story involving that. Okay. Now, the film was given a limited theatrical release in 1987, but then it became really popular, and this is where it grew its cult following, when it started to air on cable TV multiple times, almost on a rotation, between 1988 and 1991. This is why it became so successful, because it was just constantly forced down people's throats on TV.
When the end credits rolled, I didn't see any directed by credits roll up.
Well, there is a story for that.
Okay. All right.
So, okay. So let me just break this down for you. So the two directors, the original directors, Brendan Faulkner and Thomas Doran, were first-time directors, right? But they have basically done a lot of stuff. They were doing a lot of indie horror movies and stuff like that. We're talking over-the-top exploitation stuff. But they never got their projects fully completed. So this is a summary of their guys' expertise. So they made a sort of a showreel. And they made showreels and send it around studios and stuff like that to get something going for a different movie altogether called Twisted Souls, right? When that happened, basically one of the there was a financier that got involved. His name is Michael Lee, and he looked at some of the showreel stuff and looked at a project that never got out of footage from a movie that never got out called Hellspawn. So already I'm excited, right? So there's an unknown movie called Hellspawn that's never got made. Properly, and Michael Lee said, "I like these guys. I'm going to give them something." So,
okay.
They backed this movie. So they start filming. They start filming the movie in about 1984. They start filming with this financier's backing and his links to other studios. Twisted Souls, which is what just happened to be, was a very different movie altogether, and you can kind of see that. Because the idea of the script, and I think I have a quote here. Basically, the whole point of the movie was going to be a subversion of the haunted house trope. Hmm. Where they were able to find a really, really exciting location, like this sort of house. The house, by the way, let's look into it. It looks awesome, the outside of the house. It looks like an old school primary house, yeah? Interesting fact to throw into that. This house was a 24-room colonial house that was abode with by one of the American's founding fathers.
Interesting.
John Jay, apparently. So he apparently, this is a history house. This house has history already in itself.
Was he one of the Dusty Fart Monsters?
Oh, we're going to get into the Dusty Fart Monsters. Oh, fantastic. I wouldn't be surprised, actually.
Popular pie plant, pictured here.
So this is a history house. They're able to have access to this history house. They look into the house and realize there's 24 rooms. And so he's thought to himself, right, the director's literally said, and I quote, "There is a monster every two pages," when he wrote it. They batted out a script in 2 weeks, which you can kind of tell. It's going to be a little bit like Evil Dead. It's going to be a little bit like that, but with a different monster in every single room.
Yeah, I got the Evil Dead vibes, especially when what's the name flipped. Started speaking in the voice of that Paul Daniels guy.
You know what I mean? The magician.
Yeah.
Yeah, it started
getting... McGee was there as well in the background.
Yeah. It was just imagining going in, it's like, now for my next trick, I'm going to summon something else. Pretty much. It was kind of ridiculous.
Gives it a theme park ride vibe, doesn't it, with the different monsters?
Yeah.
It definitely feels like that. It feels like you should be sitting in a car somewhere and you should be roller coasted around going, now we're going into the vampire room. And just kind of do that. Even the director, Brendan Faulkner, actually said, like, this was an opportunity for us, but we felt like we could do something that was a different kind of scary. One review of that actually said that there was more monsters per minute than anything else. So, yeah, this was full on. It was intense. They purposely designed it to be, let's just make as many horrors as we can. They had a lot of connections with people who worked in gore because of all the previous stuff. And so that's why the movie gore, the gore level and the animation in this movie is actually surprisingly competent. Like, it's actually good.
It's weird. Like, halfway through the movie, there's like suddenly like some great effects moments where someone gets melted down or yes. something. But like, it's come out of nowhere. Like, it didn't, I wasn't expecting that level of confidence in the gore. But yeah, it's good. It's got, the zombies have like a sort of Fulci zombie looking style to them. Yeah, I thought it was, the effects were great actually. I really enjoyed it.
There's even a bit of stop frame in there as well, isn't there? Yeah, at one point. It's got, you got prosthetic stop frame, you've got some nice old school effects in there.
It's the only problem with the movie is that you don't really, like you said, it comes out of nowhere. You're never, you're not introduced to this until really much to the end of the movie. And so you're like, what? It's bizarre. What happened eventually is when they shot everything, all right, it was great. They had this idea going. It was wonderful. And so they started to do the post-production. They started editing it, all right? But then some creative and legal issues between the producers, the directors, and the financial backer prevented the final post-production to go for. So this is final editing, the scoring, any post-production effects, etc. It kind of stopped them from doing it. Apparently, there was a 2.5-hour version of this movie. There's a missing hour somewhere. There was a 2.5... The movie was originally 2.5 hours, but it was a rough cut. It was just a rough cut. Yeah. It wasn't meant to ever be released, right? Michael, on the other hand, really was kind of scared as he was watching the movie whether the movie was going to do any good. So he took the rough cut behind the backs of the director to the studio to show them what the progress was so far.
Mm. Which one was Michael? He was the producer.
Michael was the financier.
Right.
So the financier basically said, like, oh, wait a minute. I need money. I need to make sure this makes money. So he took the rough cut, took it to the studios, and then the studios hated it. Because like, it's slow, it's sloggy. This is not the pace we're going for. It's too violent. It's too all this without a proper cut, with any without the pacing issues and so on and so forth. When the directors found out, they got pissed. They got really, really pissed to the point that this is where they start having a couple and arguing and saying like, no, you don't understand. We need more time. We need to do this properly. While Michael was saying, you're pissing away your money. Actually, that's a quote, according to the article. It says, you're pissing away my money. I need results now. So because of the contract issues that they signed with the studio and so on and so forth, the directors lost the opportunity to use their footage, right? But the producers, on the other hand, had a different contract, which stated that they actually had some ownership of the production. So, basically, this led to about a good 40... So that means, technically, the original footage couldn't really be used. But the financier and the studios argued it can be used. So it came with a compromise. The compromise is, okay, fine. We will shoot about 65% of the movie new, right off the bat.
Right, okay.
Jesus Christ.
With a whole new cast and crew, everything else. Because they couldn't bring the original cast back. So they shot 65% of the movie with whole different plot lines, everything else, and then just cut it together to make some kind of coherent sense. In air quotes. So the financier hired Eugene Joseph to direct more footage, which was placed together with the finished footage from Twisted Soul to create the movie Spookies, because they don't actually own the rights to Twisted Souls. But the only homage to that is at the beginning, where it actually says the Twisted Souls Productions.
Wait, so which half of the movie was Twisted Souls and which?
The one that's better. Yeah, so the one with all the gore, one with the original, that's the original piece. Okay, the one with all the gore. That is Twisted Souls. The one with the magician and the reincarnated bride and the 13-year-old kid and the cat man thing, that's all new footage.
Yeah.
That's all new.
Yeah, because I hated all that stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. You can even tell the production was totally different. You can see that they now had to shoot all this again with half of the original budget to finish off 65% of the movie that didn't already exist, which is why you can notice that the movie has a lot of things involving padding. The studio said, fuck it, we've wasted enough time, it is, just launch it out. And this is how we ended up with this horrendous slice of a movie. Spookies is actually two movies in one, and you can tell.
Now that you've mentioned it, like, I feel like I can tell, but at the time, I just kind of thought it was just a bit of a lull in the film, like various parts. I kind of just felt it was a bit of a roller coaster.
I did think, like, so who's the main
make me feel a bit sick.
Character supposed to be? Because, like, halfway through the film, it becomes the dead lady who'd been brought back to life. She becomes, like, the final girl. But that's weird because she's not, like, introduced as a normal character. It's weird. It's a weird movie.
Obviously, the reception for that became, well, people noticed. It didn't do very well. The whole budget was about $5 million to make. It only grossed $17,785 in the box office.
Jesus Christ. That
but people are still doing podcasts about it today. So
yeah, they are.
It's because
they won in the end.
It's because of TV circulation. But oddly enough, it was a huge success in... Okay, do you want to guess which country this place was a huge success in?
Canada.
No.
Was it an Asian country?
Yes.
China.
Part of China.
Yeah. Hong Kong.
Hong Kong. Thank you very much. This movie was a blast in Hong Kong. It did so well. It's now become... It did so well, it was circulating in cinemas for a very long time in Hong Kong in 1987.
Wonder why. Was it the Chinese spider lady?
Maybe.
Like...
Oh, yeah, the spider queen. The weird-ass spider queen.
The weirdest thing about that is that when she appeared, she had, like, her own theme music. She had, like, some Asian music when she appeared.
Yeah.
What's going on? Maybe that's why. I kind of imagine it doing well, like, on TV, on cable TV or whatever, because it's like, it is like that constant hit of just, like, monsters and various different effects.
Yeah.
So I can imagine it doing quite well in that instance.
The best way to describe the movie, it's like a sucker punch. It happened, it's like a guy punching you, like doing that, right? But it keeps punching you every 2 minutes, and you don't have time to get your wind back. So a moment you go, all right, okay, I'm fine now. Oh, Jesus Christ, do it again. All right, there's another thing now. Jesus, stop it. I felt pummeled and the movie's not even that long. The movie's only 75 minutes, and I felt like I've been clobbered constantly over the head.
What was the first moment in the film? Because for the start of the film, I was kind of zoning out a bit, I've got to admit. But then something happened, and I was like, oh, shit. I was not expecting that. What was the moment for you?
The moment for me that where I realized that this is going to be something special for me is the introduction to the Catman and how he buries a child.
That's horrible.
Yeah,
horrible. Like, there's something about a few buried alive scenes. Like I'm thinking particularly Casino, where Joe Pesci gets his head caved in with an aluminium baseball bat and then buried alive. Something about that is really, really horrible. And even in a film like this, I find it really, really horrible.
Kid. It's weird though, because he seems to be burying that kid for like hours. Like he just seems to be constantly shoveling stuff on. I'm like, what? When is he going to fill that hole?
It's too much hard work, isn't it? It looks like too much hard work. I'm like, I don't think I'd ever want to bury a kid.
The worst thing is
too long.
You can see like the kid is just lying there, and obviously this is the part. This is the new director, whatever it is like saying, right, we can't afford a dummy, so it's just kid, just lie in there while we throw dirt on you. And you can, it looks really bad because he's in his face, he's doing this, he's already fighting it off. He's just going, oh no.
First, I was a bit like Luke at the beginning. I was like sort of not really interested. The first time I started to get interested is when I'll play a clip.
Happy birthday, Billy.
It's just when he opens the present and he's got the severed head in the box. I was like, okay, I'm interested now.
I was like, oh, okay, we're doing something weird here.
It's a surprise birthday party. Come on, guys, I know you're here.
But did you notice, you know, all the effects on the, like, sort of the voices for the, like, the demons?
Oh, it sounds
a horrible, like pipe effect. Like, they were just talking down a pipe, like a... Like a drain pipe.
But, you know, it sounds like they recorded all his lines in a bathroom. And they just said, this is fine. We will run with it. So basically, that's all the factoids for that. It's a fascinating watch once you realize the backstory to this. So we're going to go right into the plot. In fact, I'm going on IMDb, and there's two plots. And you know what? That sums it up, because there are literally two plots. So first of all, first plot is, actually, Ed, before we usually do this with a bit of music. Do you have any music?
Yeah.
Let's put some new music in, shall we? Right. So the plot is basically, there's two plots here. So I'm going to say both of them. So one is a sorcerer tries to sacrifice a group of people inside his house and the intention of using their vitality to keep his dead wife alive. And then the second plot is, taking a wrong turn, travelers find themselves trapped in a mysterious house. One horror after another threatens them as a sorcerer who lives within tries to sacrifice their eternal life for his beautiful bride. And you can start to notice that, you know, try and put these two plots together, there really isn't much of a plot here. It's just a whole bunch of shit that puts together what happens to be just, right, there's a plot here somewhere. Oh, now there's a sorcerer. Oh, wait. Oh, actually, there's a wife thing now. Oh, wait. Now there's deadites. Oh, wait. There's a weird sea monster things. Oh, wait. There's this.
Like a merman type of thing. I love the merman.
The fucking merman.
Maybe this was like the plot for The Cabin in the Woods before that actually got made. They took inspiration from Spookies. Like, how many different creatures can we get? They got all these creatures in the film. Let's get all these creatures in one scene. They just wanted to beat Spookies, basically.
Yeah. The only thing missing from this movie to make a complete reference would have been a unicorn, but that would have been something of note. Let's go through some of the beats. So first of all, how does this movie technically start?
A little boy runs away from home.
Yeah,
and, he's got like a little box of cocaine at first. Actually, snowballs. He opens it like it's a thing of cocaine.
Oh yeah,
happy birthday, coconut. Billy.
So the 13-year-old kid just runs out of nowhere, and for the first time, you're not entirely sure why he's running away, or why he's there, or what's the point of it. And actually, once you think about the whole movie, it's like, well, what's the point of half this shit anyway? So this is where you're first introduced to the hard cuts. We need to talk about the editing here. We kind of talk about the editing for the whole movie here. There are some incredibly hard left turn cuts in this entire movie. One good example is you have the kid who's like walking. He's a 13-year-old boy. He's walking around. He's lost in the forest. He's going like, whatever. He's hiding behind a tree. And he's looking all mopey. And then he just does a hard turn. And then you cut to the old movie with these people driving down the road as if it's like, oh, I'm just around the corner from these mysterious people, these asshole people who are driving.
Real weird mix of people as well.
Yeah. Weird. I don't understand why how did they know each other.
Yes! Okay, so...
Can I just comment on what was the name of the like jock-type character?
Duke.
Yeah.
Can I just comment on what he was wearing? Because he was wearing some sort of a bodysuit that looked like a bin bag that had a diagonal zip going down it.
Only like in the 80s would that be cool.
It's amazing he's supposed to be the jock. When he looks like the weirdest fashionista in that entire thing. Also, can I mention, right? you mentioned, like, how do these people know each other? I don't have a clue because they're all so fucking different. And one person looks like their dad.
Yeah. I thought it was
one of their
In dad. My notes, he's like dad guy. I couldn't remember his name, so he's just dad guy.
Yeah, because he looks at least 15 years older than everyone else, but they're supposed to be all together. In fact, at one point, I think one of the kids said, like, I'm sorry, kids. It's like, stop it. So weird. So basically, you have an old guy who looks like a dentist. You have Duke, who's wearing a bin bag. You have my favorite person of all time, the guy with the puppet.
Oh, I find him really annoying.
I love him. Yeah.
When he's introduced, he's like this.
Man, I'm looking for another party. Me too. Oh, is he starting with that thing again? Uh-oh, Duke's mad now, Mook.
Hey, I hate him. He really annoys me. He's like, shut up with your puppet.
No, here's the thing. I am the complete opposite to you. This movie was saved by the puppet, and I wanted more puppet guy.
He's got a T-shirt on. On his T-shirt is him and the puppet. It's on his
yes!
T-shirt. What the fuck is going on?
He's self-promoting himself on the puppet. It's great. He's purely, it looks out of all the characters, he looks like he's walked out of a completely different movie. Like, he just walked on set from a different film and said like, oh shit, now I'm in a horror movie. Fuck.
He's like a children's TV presenter from the 90s, though, isn't he?
You then got the British bitch. You can tell she's a British bitch because she's totally speaking in this manner and being an
really
absolute
weird
cow.
Accent.
It's supposed to be English, but I don't know what that was. Aristocratic?
And her husband's got, like, perfectly angular hair. His hair's been, like, just hairsprayed into this brick shape on his head. Lego hair.
No offense to the guy, but I had no idea they were a couple for the longest time in the movie because I kind of just thought that they were just they were just different, so different. One's a sort of flamboyant queen, and then you've got the British bitch. So you have absolutely no idea.
He's my favourite. I've got some clips of him, but I'll play them when we get to those bits.
And then you've got Carol, who is quiet and moody for most of the movie. And like, is quiet and moody at the beginning. We don't even know what her deal is. Until later on, where she's somehow an expert in all things supernatural without any explanation.
Yeah.
She is that the woman who looked a bit like, you know, the one from RoboCop?
A little bit. Yeah, the one with the bigger, poofier hair.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Like Murphy's partner.
Yeah, I can't remember her name, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't remember any of these people's names, and honestly, I don't care.
Why do you think I wrote them down as, like, dad guy and, like, stuff like that?
Dad guy, guy in bin liner.
I did remember British Duke, bitch. Though. I remember...
It's so funny.
He's very wiped clean, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. He sounds like one of the T-Birds from Greece or something, doesn't he?
Yeah,
like...
he does. Again, walked out from a different movie. All these people are from different movies. I'm convinced that the original script, which I'm very curious by, must have been like, this is a meta-narrative. This is the in-joke that all these people are not supposed to be friends. These are all stereotypes from horror movies and that all of them should be slaughtered in horrible ways. But... when you try, you don't explain that. It just looks like these people randomly met and now are forced into the situation by gunpoint to just get this done.
The characters are very like Friday the 13th type characters, I think. Like in those sequels, the Friday the 13th sequels, like the bad ones, like they're the types of characters that are in this movie.
So back to the boy. So, okay, so the 13-year-old boy takes out what looks like cocaine. Thank you, Luke. Now I can't think of it other than cocaine.
Even if he's with a little knife, like a little, like he's about to test sample the goods.
He's got a long finger now. Yeah. A really long finger now.
Happy birthday, Billy.
What a fantastic present for a 13-year-old. It's like, just here, have some cocaine. You need it. Actually, I wouldn't need it for this movie, because then suddenly, out of the blue, there's this weird guy in the trees.
Just chilling in the trees.
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah, and I thought at the beginning when watching this, I thought at the beginning is like, right, this guy's going to be bad, right? This guy's going to be a bad guy because he's just being really stalky and creepy. It's like, what is a boy like you doing in the woods like this? Like, I was thinking, where's the van? Like, where's the van?
Yeah.
But I think he was supposed to be a cool, like, rebel type guy, wasn't he? That's what the film was going for. It's like, I know we felt that cool way, rebel. But...
he's so cool! He just hangs around in trees and shit because he's that cool.
No, but these filmmakers don't know what cool is.
I think these filmmakers have absolutely no idea what cool is. So they're this coolish guy trying to be a rebel. Talking to a 13-year-old and trying... I'm not sure whether to scare him, intimidate him, or lure him into his car. I don't know what the situation
was. It came across as the latter to me. I didn't once think this guy's creepy. Well, I just thought he was definitely a potential nonce.
He
is acting is appalling, and I don't know whether I love it or hate it.
I don't know. I think we get those kind of kids in these movies. They all act that same generic way. It reminded me of the kid from Phantasm. Like, he's the level of training, I imagine.
So basically, level of wood, because there's five levels of wood here, and this is proper oak quality wood here. This is how wooden his acting was. It was hilarious.
I do like that he had an action plan, like a life plan, though. I don't know what it was. But he's like, I've got big plans.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I best get going because I've got a big night ahead of me or something. I wonder I thought he was going to be in on it. I actually thought, oh, there could be a big twist. I wonder if he's going to be the Paul Daniels guy. Like, I wonder if, like, there'd be two timelines going on here. But it wasn't quite as intricately plotted out.
I was confused. Did he turn up later in a different form, that kid, or was that just a completely different kid?
I'd be honest, I sat there thinking about this, actually. And yeah. I would like to think, for continuity's sake, that yes, it is. But I'm also remembering what this movie was, that and continuity doesn't exist. So I think, no, I don't think. I think the kid just got buried and died. Which introduces us to one of my favorite characters in the whole movie, because this is the character that's the bridge gap between both films. between the old film and the new film. And this is the weird cat man with a hook hand.
He looked like a cross between Nightcrawler from the X-Men and, you know, the boyfriend from the Royal Family.
Yeah. can we talk about his outfit as well? So he's wearing like a ruffled shirt, a gold like waistcoat.
Yeah.
What kind of boots was he wearing? He was wearing like
a wedding DJ who's gone a bit off.
Spurs. He was a gold waistcoat. He kind of like a bit like McLovin. Have you seen McLovin? Yes. He kind of had that outfit.
I love that.
And he kind of he did the same thing the whole film. Kind of just skulk around like that, and that was it. That was all he did.
The majority of the movie, it was us. And you can kind of see this is where the hard cut's in, and this is how they're trying to make both movies merge together by literally having him. And this happens a lot in the movie. He would just be walking around, peeking through a bush, or hiding behind a door, creaking as if he's looking at the previous movie. So it makes him look like he was there the whole time.
Yeah. And now you can tell, obviously, they had lots of footage of him just creeping around that he just got spliced in here and there. Like,
it's everywhere. It's like I'm imagining how many hours of footage is just this guy walking around saying, now hide behind the door, hold the door, appear through a bush, just do this for a while. Just in all the different locations in the house, just say, like, you, my friend, are going to be the glue that saves this movie.
Why did he bury the kid?
Because I don't know.
So he could become part of like the monsters in the house and stuff. They just like to
but
keep
we never
people.
See him again. So they just
if he sat up at the end. If he sat up at the end as one of the zombies, which I'm assuming he didn't, right?
No, he never did. So basically, basically this cat person first kills off the cool guy in a hilarious way because he suddenly just falls off screen. I had no idea what happened, and then he's just dead. And then the boy gets chased by this cat man, falls into a hole, and gets buried alive. That's it, and that's the end of the boy arc. This 13-year-old boy is dead.
Yeah. Well, it's great though. Like, it's supposed to be it was a sinister sort of scene when the cat guy was like killing off the boy, but the music was kind of like this.
It sounds like really bad, like the it sounds like really bad, like Resident Evil music.
Do you know what it reminded me of?
A B-side.
It's like horror Seinfeld or something. You know, like the bass in Seinfeld. Slap bass.
When he was burying the kid as well, there were so many cuts back and forth between him burying him kid just. There were about 100 cuts back and forth between that.
And it was horrible. It was quite a nasty scene.
I feel sorry for the boy. I feel really sorry for the boy because he is totally... You can see dirt's actually falling on him and he's not comfortable. And I can just imagine the new director, Eugene, just sort of creeping through going, yes, keep burying the boy. Yes, you do fine. Stay there. Ramble.
I can't breathe.
No, it's fine. We need more. Put more dirt on the boy. They get to the house. You look at the house. You go in. And like most people, like it felt like a Scooby-Doo episode here. They just walk in.
Yeah, they're just like dead intrigued by it, aren't they? Because they're like party people. They want to like find the next party, don't they?
They do. It's Duke saying, I just want to go out and party. And everyone's saying, where are you going? And I'm actually sitting there thinking, yeah, where the fuck are you going? If you didn't find the house, where would you be driving to? Yeah.
I mean, you'd only be going to a party in that outfit.
That is totally a party outfit.
Maybe they're doggers.
You don't go to the post office in that outfit, do you?
Is that why
it would make sense if
they
were doggers. That's why they don't look like they belong in the same friendship circle.
So basically,
met online.
The synopsis is that basically Duke and the puppet guy got too rowdy at their previous house party. And they all left. Maybe you're right. Maybe that was a swingers party. And they're just saying, right, we'll just, you know, we've already got each other's keys. So we might as well just get into the car, just find another place to bang.
What happened was Duke was waiting outside the previous house. And but then the bin van came past and just thought, hang on a minute. Chucked him in the back. He got crushed.
Oh, no. a worthy end to a shitty trash person.
They're all like very familiar with each other, though, aren't they?
They're all familiar.
Well,
and
you can't not be familiar with someone you've been fucking.
Yeah.
This is true. You have to get to know them before you shove something up one of their holes. So you've got to do that. Okay, once they get into the house, there's one thing that says, like, I think the girlfriend of the older dentist-looking guy says, like, I've known these people for years. And I'm sitting there going, no, you don't. These people are too different and too weird to you to properly consider them all close friends of yours.
And they all, like, hate each other as well. So, like, there's nothing that comes across as them being mitty because they all seem to absolutely hate each other.
Yeah, like they're too different. They're way too much polar opposites for them to do that, especially the puppet guy. Who the fuck knows this guy and said, oh, he's perfectly fine. We're going to bring him everywhere.
Yeah, the only ones that get on are, you know, the dad guy and his other half. He was a lot younger than him, actually.
Player.
Yeah. I thought maybe player. Definite swingers.
Definite swingers. Okay, so I think we're establishing that they were basically a swingers party. They just got a little bit in the way, and now they're just like, we need another place. Ooh, this 24-roomed house would be perfect to bang all over.
Yeah, I like, as they're exploring the house, Duke finds a locked door, so he smashes it with a chair.
Like, yes! That's the first thing he does. It's like, oh, this door won't open. Bang! Breaks it in. There's a void into the blackness, okay? And then a body falls out, holding a board and a vial. But it all happened at once. And the thing is, Duke's reaction is, oh, he's not real. Poke it. Stop poking it. So basically, would that be your reaction? If you found a dead body, would the first thing you do is poke it? Because I've always been curious about if anyone would poke a dead body.
No.
Well, I mean, it doesn't look real. But I mean, that's because it's not real. But I think my first thing would be to smell it, surely.
I think it would be overpowering if it was real.
It's like, yeah, this definitely smells like rotten eggs. Then, where we're properly introduced then to the other element in this whole thing, which is the wizard, warlock, magician thing.
Yeah, he kind of like wants to be like a Vincent Price type character, doesn't he? But he's not quite cool enough.
That he's just sitting there in his chair and he's talking to the cat man, because apparently that's his butler or something. And he's going like, yes, they're all in the house now. And now they're all just going to play my game of chess.
This seems to be the only film this actor was in.
Yeah, that's right. He's always chiming in constantly. Whenever someone says something in our main group, like someone says nobody lives here, and then he says something in reply to them all the time. This time he said, somebody does live here forever. That doesn't make sense. That's not a real sentence.
It's so weird. You can clearly tell now that I've told you these are two movies in one. You can clearly tell that this is the new stuff. This is just the guy who's saying, like, right, we need to put some kind of narrative into this 40% piece of trash. So, right, what if we have a warlock? Yes, and he is omnipotent. Yes, and he can talk and be a exposition dump. Yes, and we can have him talk in riddles. Yes, and he now has a cat person as a butler. Yes.
And he's got a permanent frog in his throat. Like, he never swallows it down.
it's like a shit Darth Vader, isn't it? Like, drainpipe Darth Vader.
Now, and this is the weird thing. So apparently, his plot line is he needs to kill all these people. So the more people he kills, the more energy he can use to revitalize and bring back his dead wife. Which, okay.
Who isn't even that into him?
I know!
You again? I'm already dead once, and now I've got to wake up and start this marriage all over again. Give it a rest.
The dialogue there is fantastic.
I've got a clip of that.
Yeah, can you play a clip of the dialogue sequence between these two?
I have waited by your side day and night. An entire lifetime.
Stay away.
Stay away from me.
I like that music.
But you see now is that they can never be separated.
Why is he German?
Why is he German?
I love her voice in that bit though. Like, no, stay away.
Imagine you've been waiting by someone's bedside day and night, waiting for them to wake up, and then they just woke up and went, stay away. You ungrateful bitch.
Weird. It's brilliant because he's just because she lit the response is like, you need to let me go, let me die. And I think the reason is because I think she has maybe been like in this magical coma for like 70 years or something, and then wakes up, and then you woken up to like, you were handsome once, and just looks up going, God, you're fugly. I don't want to, let me die. I don't want to be associated with you. Yeah, Duke finds the weird Ouija board thing, which I personally find bizarre. Because it's not really a Ouija board, because...
They sent the props guy to get a Ouija board and he'd gone, oh, I don't know what that is. He goes, just go and find one. You can find one. He came back with, like, mousetrap or something.
It's like,
this is it, right? Is this it? Yeah.
That's what we call a Ouija board. Yeah, perfectly fine. With this really cool, like, little thing that looks like it's got a skull on it, and it looks like a claw, and that's a thing that's been moved around in, that kind of thing.
Can you remember what Duke said about it? I've got
no,
a clip.
What did Duke say? Go on, play it.
It's pretty goddamn weird if you ask me. What is it, art or something?
What is it, art or something?
Oh, it's definitely some kind of art.
Some kind of art or something? Proper weird, man.
Carol comes out of fucking nowhere and starts talking like she has been an expert at the supernatural forever, even though we've never been properly introduced or know that she's actually an expert on Ouija boards and ghosts and demons.
Yeah, she loves it. She's really into it all, isn't she?
Yeah, I personally find that quite funny because there's just moments where you're sort of sitting there and she's just talking, and she a full exposition dump trying to explain what the fuck this Ouija board is. And then she says, like, well, does anyone know how to use it? The puppet guy gives it a go and doesn't know what to do with it. He's using the puppet hand, I think.
Just... She says it's to communicate. It's a communicator. And the camp guy is like this.
Communication with
the dead.
Communication with who?
Oh, I love it. No,
so much sass in his voice.
No, but then the British bitch says something afterwards. It's like, communicate with who? It's like, with the dead. And it's like, the dead? But they're dead! What? Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, fantastic. What a line.
It's a good point.
It's like, why you want to talk to the dead? They're dead. It's like, yeah, but that's the point of... Anyway, okay. You see, when you start adding logic to movies like this that don't have any logic, your head hurts.
But as you said, the puppet guy... I've got too many clips for this section, but the puppet guy...
Yeah.
Chilly Beanie, the spirits are about to speak.
Are they friendly spirits?
My
turn. Say, you're out.
This is another annoying example. I've got a few examples of him, but like, yeah, he just irritates me.
Has his puppet voice got a lisp?
Yes.
So he does.
Yes. I love it. Thing is, I want a movie about that guy. I want a movie entirely about the puppet guy. That's all I want. I want to know his backstory. I want to know what's with the puppet. I want to know if he's always like this or does he have a tender soul. I want to know more about puppet guy. There's something there that everyone else doesn't have.
If you knew somebody who was like that, you'd just be like, oh, just give it a rest. Honestly, just for one day, can we just do something and you not bring the puppet along?
Why is the puppet everywhere?
Do you think, you know the t-shirt he's got? Do you think that's like merch or whether he's just had that one made?
Self-promoting. Right. So. Oh, God. Carol gets on and then suddenly she just becomes a deadite. Like, she just becomes a full-blown deadite by this point.
Mm. Yeah, within a second, right? Like, there's no sort of halfway point. It's like a dropped banana. It just goes bam.
Boosh. Like, from here to here, now officially a deadite. And starts attempting to kill them, but doing pretty badly at it. Like, throwing the Ouija board at puppet guy and all that kind of stuff. And that is where it gets to the point where you're noticing, for no reason, like, it wasn't really a proper summoning. Like, she only just touched it once, and now she's a deadite. And then the zombies come out outside with some really cool zombie-looking effects.
Mm. Yeah, one guy's got his eye like stuck on a spring or something sticking out of his head.
Yeah, the close-ups are really good, like when you saw that little details like that.
Yeah, so you can see the original budget with the gore stuff. Like, you can say, like, yeah, okay, the gore stuff was going to be cool. Like, you can see that. This is the first time I've said, oh, okay, the gore is going to be interesting now because there was nothing like that before. And because the zombies are outside, now again, this is the thing. Everyone seems to be experts because at one point it's like saying, look, it's like, okay, they close the door. It's like, they look like the zombies won't be coming in. How do you know this?
Yeah, that was Dad Guy, wasn't it? He goes, yeah, Dad Guy says this.
Those things aren't going to let us out of here. You still want to go out there?
So what the hell are we going to do? Just stand here and wait for them to break in and murder us, huh?
I don't think those things can get in here.
You're right.
You're right.
But he's so calm the whole time. He can't do, like, hysterical, can he? Calm down. He's like this calm dad guy.
Well, it's because he's the dad. He's the only parent in the bunch of these people, clearly.
Because literally everyone has been screaming outside before that point. And then he's just like, they can't get in here.
So, right. The rest of the time, now they've finally split up, okay? They decide to split up and look for clues, basically, just like every other haunted house. And now we get to, this is the bit I'm finally want to start talking about, all the monsters in this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
This is when it gets really interesting. This would be, it'd make a good music video, this film. You know, you sort of just have the sort of the ghost stuff happening during the movie, or even like in the back, like on a bar, they just had the sort of the monster scenes playing on the background behind the bar.
Yeah, this would be a good one for that, like, just the background, like, because the visuals are really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Because out of context, if you had individual scenes, you can see that, oh, they're pretty decent, each individual monster. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. On their own, they work. But in connection to all this and the hard cutting and jumping between another movie that doesn't make any sense and blah, 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 it's kind of semi-ruined. So what's your... Okay, so there's loads of monsters. So let's go around the room, children, and talk about what's your favorite monster in this series, Ben? What's the favorite monster that appeared?
I thought there was an obvious one, but I think there's a couple that I really liked.
So do you want to share one, Luke?
I'll leave the more obvious ones to you guys, and I'm going to go with the Halloween costume Grim Reaper guy.
Yeah!
who
it's like every generic, like, Grim Reaper, like, sort of Halloween, sort of the cheapest Halloween costume of a Grim Reaper. Yeah. It's him, and like the bright glowing red eyes and everything. Yeah. He's amazing.
His side's pretty nasty. Like he hits the table, it goes right into it. But he obviously just looks like a guy in a suit. Yeah, he's like slamming this thing, and he's supposed to be sort of floating around. But somehow they end up on the roof, and he chucks the Grim Reaper off the roof, and he explodes when he hits the ground.
The explosion was beautiful.
It's literally this loud.
Like, Jesus.
Like, if he's the Grim Reaper, obviously you can't kill the Grim Reaper. But clearly, this is what happened. Just before the Grim Reaper touched the ground, he just disappeared into a puff of smoke, and that's what the explosion is. Like, aha!
Yeah. It's almost like they had some, like, pyro they could use. So, like, well, we've got to use it for something. They just had this really epic explosion for that death guy.
Fantastic. Oh, the Grim Reaper was kind of awesome. Yeah, that's a good end. Okay, so Ben, how about you?
I don't reckon anything beats the farty dusty men for me, because they were...
they're my favourite too.
Particularly because they've got a fight sequence with Duke, and you can see, like, all his outfit from different angles.
You see a bit of crack? I think you see a bit of crack, right? Like, he bends over at one point. Yeah.
They're awful as well, because at one point he overpowers two of them, just pushes them away like that. Like the putties from Power Rangers. But
yes, I was totally thinking that. But just fartier, which I don't understand why the farts, though. Why were they farting?
Was that added in post, do you reckon?
I think...
Hang on a minute. Do you not really be good if they were farting? I'll know. I think the scene's fine. Add a few farts into this scene and tell me if it doesn't improve it.
Oh, actually.
Yeah, right, it does. Actually,
I've been actually able to find a factoid about that. I just found it now. Brilliant. So the farting was done in post-production. But when Spookies were actually being made, so this wasn't the original thing from Twisted Souls. They weren't meant to be farty, right? But they put the farts in order to make the scene seem a bit more comical. And so it is no longer, so it seems less violent when they melted.
That wasn't on the soundboard.
Sorry, that was me.
I was like, is that one of the farts from the soundboard? I remember.
No, that was me.
I have got a clip of this scene, actually, which I'll play in a minute, but there. Yeah.
Do it.
Go on.
Play it.
You know, maybe there's some way out of here. Maybe through some secret wars.
It's getting flashbacks of my granddad walking into the room.
It's got like a belly rumbling noise as well, hasn't it? Like,
these guys are hungry and farty and they're ready to go after you.
Thing is, the kid in me, that appeals to me every time I hear it. It's like I'm just like laughing at fart jokes. It's just he just wins every time.
But then and then those guys are killed by literally just throwing wine at them and having them melt.
Yeah.
That's strange. So they use an axe to like cut a hole in the big wine barrel and that just melts these guys. But why do they even think of that as an idea? You're being attacked by these farty dusty monsters. You're thinking red wine, that's their secret weakness.
Well, I think it's because Duke literally does an uppercut to one of these farty minor zombie things. And he lands in a puddle and he notices that the one's a bit steamy. And he sits there going like, water, it must be water. Get the wine. And a flood. Like this, these barrels must have had so much pressure in them because they just Ed, your favourite monster?
Well, mine was the... I like the farting zombies, but I also like Merman as well.
The Merman. Okay.
Like the fish, weird fish guy. That it just seems like really out of place because obviously he would only be really sort of dangerous in water, but he's out of water and he's kind of like flapping around on the ground.
These are the ones, like you mentioned before, that look like boglins because they are just so weird and makes no sense. So the British guy, the British bitch and the posh and the weird flamboyant boyfriend guy thing with the sarcasm the size of up to here gets slowly devoured by these weird mermen. The fight sequence was interesting. Where they're just struggling, and she's like, "Oh no!" There's a piercing sort of one pierces one of the mermen, like, and then drops an entire bookshelf on the other and just starts stamping on it, going, "Why don't you die?"
I'm struggling to remember how she dies now because she gets away from the boglins, doesn't she?
She does, yeah. and her
face melted, didn't she?
By the queen boglin.
By the queen boglin. The electric tail. With tentacles. Yeah, yeah.
She gets very wounded, though, doesn't she? She's almost like bleeding out, pretty much. Yeah, she's like really only just gets away. But my favourite bit of that kind of scene is where like the sassy guy is like he starts drinking, and she says like, "Oh, you don't drink," and he basically wants to get drunk anyway. And they say this, like, I'll just play it.
Go for it.
David, throw that crap away.
Why? Because you say so?
Because you don't drink, you asshole. And you're only getting sick. God knows it's touched you.
I don't give a damn, honey.
That's my favourite line of his. I don't give a damn, honey.
And I love it because he takes a swig, he just spits it out immediately. He's like, "Oh, flavors! I've never touched alcohol in my life." She gets killed off because she sees a ghost or some kind of apparition of the flamboyant boyfriend who's now dead, and says, "Like, come join us." It's like basically, "Come join us to the dark side. We have cookies, you know." And suddenly gets killed by Queen Boglin. With really kind of cool looking stop motion tentacles with lightning powers, and her face melts, which is brilliant. But it's the first time we've seen like this kind of claymation effect. So I was so confused when I first saw it.
I really like that it's included in films, though. It's something you don't really see nowadays, is it? They had a lot of that in Evil Dead, didn't they?
Yeah.
It adds a lot of charm because it's kind of like it's funny rather than scary, isn't it? Like Clay.
There's another monster that really had no effect on the film at all. She was like a little puppet. You know the old puppet TV show, the satirical thing with Maggie Thatcher in that? It looked like one of those...
Spitting Image.
Like one of the Spitting Image things. It was like a evil laughing little bride thing.
Like a witchy type character, wasn't it? Like, it looked like...
She knocked
the bride out,
yes,
and then brought her back to life, and then just flew up. I'm not even totally sure what she was doing, but she looked cool. Laughing,
yeah, she looked cool because she had the stretch out face. It's very Evil Dead-ish at some points. It's got like bleh, and like, but you can see that you can clearly see that was a puppet. Like you clearly see that was just a puppet, no effort, and just knocks the bride down who's escaping from the evil warlock, and just flies away. Really cool looking, but makes no sense.
Yeah.
Also reminded me of like a bad baddie from Terrorhawks. Remember Terrorhawks?
Oh yeah.
Terrorhawks was like one of the Gerry Anderson ones, wasn't it? Like not one of the most popular, but there's a really scary villain characters in that. It's like really frightened me as a kid.
Okay, my favourite has to be the Spider Queen because, again, makes absolutely no sense why there's a Spider Queen there, but she is definitely the best looking effect in the entire movie.
She's scary, and her transition of like going into the spider is awesome. I really liked
really
it.
They could have made a film based entirely just on this monster.
Yeah,
yes.
I watched it and enjoyed it.
And I think, honestly, if they stuck the if the original guys wanted to, they could have just picked one monster and made an entire movie out of it. Mm. Like you could have made an entire movie with the farting miners, or you could do an entire movie with like the Spider Queen or whatever it is. You could do a whole movie on one of them, but they said no, let's have them all. They got too greedy and too big for their britches, and this is what happens.
Mind you, a whole movie of the farting zombies. That's stretching that joke a bit far.
Yeah. You're sick of it after 10 minutes. All right.
But yeah, Spider Queen, brilliant thing. She gets transformed. All the arms come out. She attacks the puppet guy and just eats him, basically.
Inflates him. Yeah.
That was weird. It's good.
He's like pops, isn't he? He like pops and deflates like a balloon. It's really funny. It's great.
It's like when you used to have one of those like cans of juice as a kid and just suck it in. Basically, that was. It was brilliant. Yeah. And like I said, that bit that I'm going to constantly remember. It's that little part.
You get stuck to it. You get stuck to like a spider web as well.
And it's just like,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's true, because the spiderweb bitch is like, like he's not really trying. Like, no offense, buddy. Yeah. Like, you could put more effort into it.
He could have got away.
Yeah. And he just looks a little bit worried as well. He doesn't look like he's really going to get, like, you know, eaten. He's just like, oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, what are you going to do? Oh, go on then.
You're going to deflate me, are you?
You are?
Yeah, let's see what we can do.
Oh no! So then this leads to what I believe was the original ending of Twisted Souls, which is suddenly they find Carol, the ones who are alive, which is the girlfriend of Duke and the original and the older couple with the old guy and everything else, right? And they find Carol, who now becomes fully possessed by something, and then her brain sort of explodes and emits old people rays?
Yeah.
What?
She's being controlled by the attic. Like the attic guy. The guy in the attic is like talking through her all the time, isn't he?
Is that where he is, the attic? I thought he was in the basement for some reason.
We have no idea where this happened. We have no idea where he's hiding.
Yeah, I'm just guessing. There's no indication to say it was in the attic.
This is you putting logic into this movie. Okay, it has to be the attic because they've never been to the attic. So we're going to make it the attic. Fine, whatever. They're right. They're in the attic. Again, I just explained this. Old people rays. I had no idea that was even a superpower. Just, I'm going to emit old people rays on you. And the funny thing is now the old guy actually looks his age. extra
wrinkly. Doesn't that kind of happen when... Doesn't something like that happen in Indiana Jones when they open the Lost Ark? Mm. When it gives some stuff off, some people's like hair starts going grey and that. Is that? Maybe that's something else I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
No,
got that vibe.
This is you, Ben, putting logic again into this movie. It's just it's like, if you're trying to think, you have to stop. Stop thinking that this makes sense. None of this makes sense. Yeah. You're going to hurt yourself when you start thinking, oh, it's like that. No, it's not.
If you try to put too much logic into this film, you know that scene in this film where Paul Daniels is vain? It's like erupting out of his head.
Why was that even a thing?
Well, it's like he's like Charles Xavier power, right? That's like his. You should have just done that. If you just touch your head, that's all you need to do to show that you have that power. But no, he had to get the vein. He'd like he needed a Nurofen.
That one little vein is just there. Going. What looks like the old guy, the older guy, finally gets the vial, throws the vial at Carol, and she explodes, and the Ouija board explodes, and that seemed to be the original ending. That the final three people survive. They survived the haunted house, and they would leave. But we never actually see them leave, do we?
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah,
true. But by that point, actually, the movie just that their arc ends. Like, because now we're going back to the reincarnated wife thing again, who stabs the magician in the eye, which is awesome. I think in the eye or the forehead.
It's the forehead. I've got a clip of that. It's cool.
Go on.
Okay.
Tell me that you will love me.
Well, like Bane.
You will love me for all time.
I will love you for all time.
Brilliant.
Can't go over that guy.
It sounds brilliant. It's awful. So
Brian Dundee, or whatever his name is.
do we care? Brian Dundee. So basically she runs away and runs out in outside the house where she's now being completely tormented by all the zombies. And you can see that these are not the same zombies from the original one because they have weird blue body paint, and you can actually see some of the extras haven't finished their full paint, so some of their fingers are still regular skin color and stuff like that.
I quite like these scenes. These scenes are quite prevalent in like zombie movies around this period, where the sort of the 80s action beats kick in, and then zombies start erupting out of the ground, and then the woman's just running away from the massing horde.
It's very thriller quite this bit, wouldn't it?
It's very much like
I was looking at this going, this feels like it looks like these guys are all extras from the Thriller video. Yeah. And she runs. Her dress mysteriously gets ripped off because, of course, it does. And
that's what the director said.
Before the chase, though, you get my favorite zombie, which is this one.
Mama. Mama.
I love that one. Like, really frightening zombie. Like, Mama.
There's a whole other character. Like, her child is in this film.
Yeah. Yes. We completely missed
it. I thought it was related to that in some way.
So maybe the whole. Okay, now is us trying to figure out what their intentions were, which is going to hurt us, really, mentally. But I think, basically, then, trying to fix this somehow is that. She's being the bride. Obviously, you have the warlock, and so the warlock's saying, "We have new children now." So every time they kill someone and becomes a part in their grave, which was one thing. One bit we completely missed: a guy gets killed off by literally getting killed by the cat guy, I think it is, and sees his own grave come out of the ground.
Yeah.
It's like all those zombies are like her sort of children, but how would they know that?
I don't know. Who cares? So somehow all the zombies know that they're children, and then it's like, Mom, come back. And I'm imagining them actually all thinking, Mom, it's been 70 years. You owe me so many Christmas presents. So she finally starts to escape, finds a car randomly, which I thought was the original car from the opening. No, it's a completely different car.
Mm.
Randomly. She gets in, finds another random guy who happens to be parking there and says, "Oh shit, zombies." They drive away.
Mackenzie Crook, innit?
Yeah, which later turns out, "Oh, thank God I've escaped." And he says, like, "But you can never escape. You know I've always loved you." And leads to the ending of that, which reveals that little cute little hunk guy's actually the cat person with the hook hand the entire time.
It reminds me about, you were saying about Thriller earlier, is another kind of Thriller moment. Is it like, you know, when Michael Jackson kind of turns around and goes like, "I'm not like other guys," kind of thing. It's like, she thinks she's safe with this guy in the car and he turns around to be the cat man.
Yeah, and okay, and then the movie actually sort of ends there, but there's one thing we haven't mentioned. Right at the very, very beginning, there is a pulsating grave that happens, I don't know, with no context. Like, we don't understand it.
Yeah.
And then at the end, it turns out that the magician has been in that grave the entire time and resurrects himself, but that doesn't work because he was in the attic, or is he dead? Whatever. Jump scare, the end. Oh, that was literally it, basically. And that was the movie. A whole bunch of shit happens. It gets very confusing and we don't know what's going on.
Yeah. Right. You're right. It is a movie.
It's an experience. I would think it's an experience.
Crashometer.
Thank you, Ed. So the way we wrap up around here is, you know, you have your ratings and your rankings. You do sort of A to F and that kind of stuff. We do things a little bit differently around here. So we have about five different settings. So we'll talk about them, first of all, for people who don't know about them, and introduce you guys. So first of all, you have tame. Tame means that it was pretty boring. There was nothing special about it. Nothing that really tickles your fancy, right? Tiny bit trashy, which means it had a few moments, but it really didn't, like, go over the realm of anything really exciting. Then you have trash. That's the middle point, and that is the sweet spot. It's the mwah! It's the golden goose of rubbish. You then have too trashy. This is where the movie's starting to get bad, and we're starting to get a bit frustrated with it. It's still got quality moments, but we're starting to get annoyed at it. And then finally, we have torture. A movie that was so bad that we absolutely hated the experience. So,
okay.
So let's. I'm going to open it up to the board. Where do you think this falls on the trashometer?
I know where I'm going. I'm going like tiny trashy, tiny trash. What was it?
Tiny bit tiny trashy.
Tiny bit trashy. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, you think you could have a bit trashy? How about you, Ben?
Yeah, I think I'd probably go for too trashy, because I was definitely getting frustrated at this film. Obviously, it had some highlights, had some good moments. But too trashy. I think a bit above that sweet spot for me in terms of enjoyment.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel that vibe. I'm thinking too trashy kind of falls into that vibe. How about you, Ed?
Yeah, I definitely think too trashy. So like around about sort of 70% on the scale, it's like it's too much. There's some, a lot of stuff going on, but it kind of annoys me, the combination of everything.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a bit too much. Too trashy.
I think you're right, because I think the movie is like a child with ADHD that doesn't have its medication sorted. It's jumping around all over the place. It's hard to handle, and you will get angry at the kid, but just if you don't tell him to calm the fuck down. So, I would say, and I think, can we all be in agreement? Do we all think that this movie is too trashy?
Yeah, I'll be up for that. Yeah, so. Sounds about right. Yeah.
I think so.
Cool. Okay. Right, so too trashy it is. Thank you very much. Cool.
That's the level rising up, by the way.
That's the level going right up.
Yeah. The top. I thought it was me for a second.
No. It would have been more farting if that was the case. So fantastic.
On the video version, it's more like obvious what that is. But
brilliant stuff. So yeah, okay. So if this is the first time anyone here is listening to us, thank you very much for joining us today on the Trash Tapes. If you want to sort of find us on anything, we are on all podcasting platforms. So Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Buzzsprout, Acast, you can find us on anywhere. Leave a review, because if you do leave a review, a 5-star review, and we get enough of them, we will read out your comments. So that is definitely something you can always put into there as well. And also subscribe to us all on the YouTube channels. We have all the stuff. We have Enigmatic Play for all the video game stuff. We have Enigmatic Productions for all the reviews and short film stuff and everything else. And also Trash Tapes has a YouTube channel where you have exclusive little videos of basically me torturing Ed or vice versa with weird shit we find on the internet, which is just absolutely hilarious. I would also like to thank our guests for coming on and joining me on this rather this experience of Spookies with me. So thank you very much
for that.
Thank you. Do you want to plug your stuff, basically?
You want to plug your stuff, Ben?
Yeah. So so our podcast is on all platforms: Spotify, iTunes, and the like. We've also got a YouTube channel, Hawk and Cleaver, and all our social media is Hawk and Cleaver as well. You can find us at Hawk and Cleaver on Twitter and Instagram, and just Hawk and Cleaver on Facebook, where we post a new episode of the Horror Hangout every single week, every Wednesday.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. Thank you very much on that. Are there any kind of episodes you're thinking in mind at the moment? Are there any up running ahead or ones you want to share with everyone before we sort of wrap up?
Well, I think are trashy. I mean, the unnammable. Pretty trashy.
Yeah,
we've done Alone in the Dark,
Okay, yeah, that's definitely trashy.
That will be high on the trashometer.
That's torture, yeah. I recommend that for an episode, for a future episode for you guys. Definitely.
Fantastic. So yeah, thank you guys very much for joining me, and to everyone out there, keep an eye on your trash. There might be some treasure in there. See you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
Thank you for listening to this podcast episode and hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please share it around with movie lovers you know, maybe add a star rating or write a good review. All of this helps with the algorithm and provides us with more opportunities to reach the ears to a whole new bunch of bad film fanatics. Want to find out more about us? Then head over to our socials where we provide sneak peeks and up-to-date news on everything nostalgic and trashy. You can find our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter pages in the description. So please, follow us. See you next time, cinephiles.